Hey everyone, it's Michael. Before we begin, I want to remind you all to join the new Union Sports Goalkeeping Community, a social media network that reimagines how we engage, educate, and entertain one another. To download free, go to www.theunionsports.com or the Union Community on Apple or Google Play stores. Thanks for making the Union possible, and on with the show. Welcome to Inside the 18. I'm Michael Magid, live from Hollywood, California. With me is none of the usual cast of characters that you're used to seeing, guys. No Pro GK Academy, Omar Zini. He is knee-deep in video coordination duties and assistant goalkeeper coach duties and reserve team goalkeeper coach duties. Saskia Weber is on holiday, as they like to say, over across the pond, and joining to fill the void, guys, we have the team, two of the members of the team from goalkeeper.com. We got the one and only, way too young to be in the position that he's in, Sam Hudspeth, and I think the mastermind here, the chief operations officer himself, Brendan Roseland of goalkeeper.com. Guys, thanks for making this appearance. This is gonna be fun.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us, Michael.
Yeah. So for some people out there who might not be familiar with goalkeeper.com, apparently me, because I kept saying the ING at the end, and that's like saying Voldemort. Like, you don't want to do that. You want to make sure that it's keeper at the end. Why don't you explain what goalkeeper.com is?
Absolutely. Well, it's new. We can start there. Goalkeeper.com launched a little under a month ago. And we're trying to be do well and do right by the goalkeeping world. We started off and introduced ourselves with a children's book, which Sam can probably talk more about. But we're trying to help goalkeepers everywhere we can and hold a critical mirror up to them as well.
That's awesome. And by the way, guys, feel free to step in anytime. Otherwise, I don't want it to be a Q&A. Otherwise, I'm going to feel like a reporter, and we don't want that, because the reporters here are Sam Hudspeth right here. Sam, why don't you tell us a little bit? You're 18 years old, and you're in journal. Like, the fact that you're in this position right now, like, how the heck did this happen? Are you still playing, by the way?
I'm not playing, no. Sorry, excuse me. I mean, it's a pretty good question, Michael, how I did get into this position in the first place. I mean, a little bit on me, kind of on a personal level. So when I was 15, I began a blog called The Goalkeeping Blog. Some of the viewers may or may not be familiar with that. And it was basically a kind of bi-monthly editorial publication on all things goalkeeping. When COVID hit, in the first lockdown, I began copywriting. Obviously, all my school exams got cancelled. So I began freelancing for various branding agencies and doing bits and bobs all over the place, really. And I became involved with the goalkeeper.com project by accident, actually, in January 2021. And the ride has been pretty immense so far. So I now head up our narrative team at goalkeeper.com, which kind of covers editorial, social media, and a bit of everything, really, a bit of podcast, a bit of brand development. And we're putting ourselves in a really good place, I think, to begin kind of contributing meaningfully to the discussion in goalkeeping, both on the pitch and off the pitch. But in terms of playing, no, unfortunately, I've hung my boots up. I'm retired, so to speak.
Well, you know, I will say this right now, Sam, just listening to you right now, I just thought I was watching Match Day on Sky Sports. Like, that's what it felt like so eloquently spoke. You should have heard me at 18 years old, like, not exactly as articulate in any way whatsoever. And for those of you guys are wondering if Omar Zini was as articulate at 18 years old, I found clips of him being interviewed in high school after a match. And it definitely took a few sessions before he had that communications background. Brendan, what a jewel to find, man, to find a young man like this who has already been kind of spreading his wings since he was I knew about the goalkeeping blog. I didn't know it was being run by a child. I just thought it was like a 42-year-old, like, ex-prem goalkeeper analyst or something like that. So how did you two linked up?
It kind of just happened. We got put in the same room as each other, or I guess a call, since we were in kind of the tailing edge of the first lockdown series. And it was like, wow, you really got something here. Let's work together. And it kind of happened by accident. We met through a former agency we were working together with on a separate project. We ended up firing them and doing everything ourselves, but that's been quite a fun thing to watch Sam grow as well, because it's been fun to throw him all sorts of different challenges and see him handle them with pretty much the same calm, cool, collected demeanor he just shows us all the time.
So he basically has all the attributes to be a proper goalkeeper, as they like to say in the UK, right there. But behind the scenes. Now, Sam, do you do any coaching as well, or just all on the reporting side?
I don't. I mean, I actually would like to get into coaching, but unfortunately, because of the lockdown, all the FA waiting list badges are really, really long. And that's maybe something we'll look at later in the show, talking about, you know, coaching and getting into that. Especially in the youth realm itself. But no, I did play at a pretty high youth level. So I played academy football at a range of clubs from category one to category three in the UK. So although I wasn't a 42-year-old ex-prem goalkeeper, I do like to think I did know what I was talking about to a fair degree, and also had kind of a fairly unique perspective, I suppose, being someone who was in the academy system for a period of time and then kind of came out the other end and, you know, perhaps differently to the majority of boys or girls that go into that system. I actually found that coming out of the academy system, I realized I didn't want to be a professional footballer. And although the experience was fantastic, I just found that kind of observing the game and being involved in the game, but maybe not on the pitch, can actually be just as exciting. And I think at goalkeeper.com, and what I've, you know, been able to do with the blog and then becoming part of the goalkeeper.com project has really encapsulated that, to be honest.
You know, one of the cool things that I've seen, and again, guys, feel free to step in, Brendan. So if you have anything you want to spiel, just feel free to do it. One of the things that I've been fascinated with seeing at goalkeeper.com is the variety of content that you all are trying to showcase over there. And I think that that's something that's kind of lacking when it comes to goalkeeping content out there in the interweb, in the world wide web, is a lot of it is just very much like, here's my session design, here's four phases. And it's kind of boring. Not to be disrespectful to anybody who does that well, because there's some people who've been on the show who've done an amazing job with it. But there's a lot of aspects to the position. And Brendan, I know you guys have been trying to share, almost even showcase kind of like some comparisons in media to goalkeeping. And so maybe for some of the kids out there who don't see, you know, don't kind of understand the coach talk, maybe when they're on the field, they say, oh, I've seen that movie and I do remember that character and I see those characteristics and those traits in a goalkeeper. So this is kind of cool for me now.
Yeah. Nice lead in. The one thing we did release today was a story we actually did on O'Shea Jackson Jr. Who, if you don't know, that's Ice Cube's son. And the movie he was in called Den of Thieves, which is total like shoot 'em up heist movie. But what really struck me about that movie that it made me stand up and just kind of get really excited when I watched it was the twist is the goalkeeper is the mastermind. And so we've gotten some we've gotten our art team to do some work and to put some portraits together. He's also there's a page dedicated to him, and we call it our children's book, but it's called The Keeper's Call, and it's our Hello World piece of work for goalkeeper.com. It was really great to see goalkeepers portrayed in the media as these kind of clever people, because I mean, I don't think I've seen any goalkeepers portrayed in the media otherwise. And maybe Sam, I know you, when we've spoken about this, you knew some other goalkeepers who were portrayed out there, but I don't think there were recent films.
No, very much. No. I mean, Den of Thieves, it's funny, actually, when I was first introduced to this by Brendan, I think our opinions differed on the film, but actually coming to kind of think through the film more and actually watching it several times to write this article.
Glad we got Metacritic over here, Sam.
No, definitely. And I mean, yeah, like I say, watching it several times to actually get this article together for today, you do actually begin to really appreciate that. I mean, you know, I'd love to know kind of if there was any intention behind that from the guys in Hollywood, because it was a mastermind stroke, like seriously. And, you know, funnily enough, when you talk about goalkeepers in media, generally, we often get dragged into the conversation about punditry and kind of, you know, perhaps the lack of informed commentary there is. But likewise, when you look at film and the kind of way that goalkeepers are portrayed in films, it's kind of, how do I phrase this? It pulls off the common stereotype. So you know, I think you'd be hard pressed to go out there and find a film where there is a proper presentation of a goalkeeper, or at least a presentation of a goalkeeper that a goalkeeper would feel was accurate, right? So in that sense, I mean, the kind of stereotypes, you know, do play across media, perhaps subconsciously. But in Den of Thieves, it's a really, really pertinent kind of deeper portrayal of what it means to be a goalkeeper. And I mean, if you've seen the film, you'll know that the, I won't reveal too much, just in case those that haven't seen it want to.
Yeah, don't spoil the film. I haven't seen Den of Thieves, so like, I feel like I need to go back and definitely watch this movie for sure.
But if you do want the spoilers and you want to have a look at the plot, then definitely check out the article. It's it went up today on goalkeeper.com's editorial section. And I'm not sure if we can kind of share a link here, obviously on the screen, but something that can definitely, if you go to our socials,
share it in the share in the comments, and people I think can get it in the comment section. So if you just put it in the comment section right there, otherwise known as comments in StreamYard, and it's going to 50,000 different streams. I don't know. I'm looking. There's like a row of different platforms where this thing is going off too. Before we kind of get into today's topic, guys, we're just talking about empowering youth goalkeepers and introducing the position to younger kids out there. Why don't you talk a little bit about the children's book, Brendan, and the inspiration for that?
Sure. So as we got out of kind of all the COVID lockdowns, I was with a friend, and the idea was, we just had an idea one night, like, oh, let's start writing some children's books. It'd be really fun. And since then, it's become a passion project. And in parallel, I got pulled into the goalkeeper.com project. And one day, Sam, I was just like, hey, let's write a children's book about goalkeeping. And I want to say start to finish, Sam, what did it take us? Four months?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, it took us 4 months, and we say children's book, but there's a lot of Easter eggs hidden in there for those who have played the game before. And kind of the whole theme is once you've been a goalkeeper, you really never stop being a goalkeeper because of the perspective and the experiences that we all share that are just so unique to the position. So that was a really awesome project to work on. Our art director and illustrator for that project, Juan Carlos, he's based out of Costa Rica. We stole him from the agency down there that represented both national beer brands, and he's just absolutely crushed that and embraced that since then.
Oh, wait, I thought Sam was the illustrator. I thought you were the illustrator.
He can't be that talented. No. Stop pumping him up.
Oh my God. No. I thought he was writing, reporting, and doing the illustration for the content, because you were so passionate about the children's book. I'm like, well, he clearly wrote the book. Like, he's so into this book.
I mean, it was a combined effort on the copy front. You know, my name is on the cover, of course, but we had some really good input from a team. And because it's important to say that at goalkeeper.com, there are a lot of different goalkeepers. I think it's 7 or 8 goalkeepers that are actually in the team. So in that sense, we do have this kind of collective approach to our media generally. And in the book, you know, of course, there was, in terms of actually writing words, it was a kind of smaller, you know, portion of the team that ended up doing that. But in terms of the influences upon it, you know, there was quite a wide array of goalkeeping experiences. And no, I will assure you, Michael, I cannot draw for the life of me. Like, honestly, you do not want to say that mess.
Wait, hold on a second. This wasn't you. You didn't do all of this right here. Look at this. Look at Oliver Kahn right over here. This is incredible. I'd be scared if Oliver Kahn had a giant, massive head like that too, and was pointing at me to set up a wall. Now, Brendan, you know, before we get into this topic, though, Oliver Kahn was an inspiration for you specifically, right? Growing up, that was kind of one of the goalkeepers you kind of looked up to.
Absolutely. I mean, I didn't know. I knew soccer or football, however you want to say it, was huge in Europe, but I couldn't, for the life of me, probably like a lot of kids in my generation, name any goalkeepers that were playing. And then my brother, out of kind of nowhere, had one of his friends visit Germany, and they brought me back an Oliver Kahn jersey, and I started looking this guy up, and then I became his like number one US fan. So from then, it was just kind of it was awesome to watch his career. I mean, in the 2002 World Cup final with Brazil and Germany, like, that broke my heart. But yeah, it was a huge Oliver Kahn fan. And then on this fold as well, on the left, I don't know if you can zoom in and see who's on the chessboard, but there's a little shout out to Edwin van der Sar over there.
Oh yeah, I see him on the other side right over there.
right? So we got VDS on the back of his jersey there. And one of the biggest things is that we're curious about is where do goalkeepers go when they stop playing? Because it's like, right here you have two examples, and this was intentional on this fold. We have Edwin van der Sar, who's in the management at Ajax now, and Oliver Kahn, the same at Bayern Munich, right? Like, how are goalkeepers progressing in a professional life outside of goalkeeping, and how has that changed them? That's a narrative we'd love to hold the microphone for and share. And kind of back to having all those goalkeepers on our team, that's been a really unique experience to see what we can accomplish and how goalkeepers can share their perspectives all in alignment while being on the field and playing together all at once. But thankfully we don't have to run.
But what I love, Brendan, about this all is that you're using something that a child can be very familiar with. They've all seen a chessboard. They've all seen checkers. And so it's not a foreign entity. So if you're 6, 7 years old and you're just being introduced to the position, this kind of makes sense to you. You're like, oh, my parents play this game. I've seen this before at the park or whatever. I just assume everyone in the UK just sits around playing chess, Sam. That's what we think in the United States, that you guys are very distinguished like that. You know, it's funny that you mentioned about moving into leadership positions, because that is very true. Even in the United States, and for those of you guys who are listening who are not from the United States, there's a former goalkeeper named Garth Lagerwey, who became a very successful executive here in the United States. First, unfortunately for Real Salt Lake, and Brendan knows that all too well, coming from Colorado Rapids, and then over obviously at Seattle Sounders. Sam, you know, obviously, you know, you're not pursuing a professional playing career, but it seems like you've been able to utilize the skill sets that you've learned as a goalkeeper at a high level to transfer into a leadership position with goalkeeper.com. Is this just a natural transition, you think, for somebody who played the position?
Well, I think it's an interesting point you make, Michael. I mean, going back to my own playing days, when I was about 12, my first ever kind of proper goalkeeping coach. So fairly late, actually, when you look at like the way things are going nowadays, when there are kids being coached, you know, at the age of sort of 6 and 7 to a really high kind of technical spec. When I was about 12, I kind of went to my first proper goalkeeper coach. And he was a guy from Trinidad and Tobago, and he was ex-military, ex-police. Hollis Boisson, his name is, shout out to him, based in Reading, where I'm from. And it was just a once a week thing, you know, and he was really, really tough. And I'm talking tough to the point that if you did not cry on your first session with Hollis, he was doing something wrong, right? But this guy, honestly, you could not have found someone who cared more about his kids and pushed them as far as they could possibly go. And although I didn't kind of pursue a professional career, I think much to his disappointment, pretty much. And we, you know, being a goalkeeper, and especially a goalkeeper under his mentorship, just kind of gave you this understanding that, you know, there's no sort of real boundaries. You know, you've got to go as far as you think you can go. And if you're willing to kind of push yourself to that level and willing to also go it alone sometimes, as goalkeepers have to do, then, you know, you will end up getting to where you want to be. Now I'm only 18. I'm not going to come and say I've been successful yet, right? Of course, I'm doing things that maybe a lot of 18 year olds aren't doing. But you know, you can't put definitive kind of success at the age of 18. But like I say, you know, when we talk about goalkeepers generally, having that kind of agency, that almost kind of brazen ambition, is something that I think really does originate in the position. I think in my case, especially from working with Hollis, you know, this particular coach.
So let's kind of delve into this topic and everything here, guys. And like I said, today's topic, and this is something that Brendan and Sam had recommended, and that's empowering the youth goalkeeper. This actually happened naturally in a conversation that we had a couple days ago off the air, when we were discussing just, you know, allowing goalkeepers to explore and learn to become autonomous individuals on the field rather than dependent on coaches at a young age. So, Brendan, what do we mean by empowering a keeper?
That's a great question. I mean, for me, I kind of see four phases of players. The first, at the youngest age, right? You have to introduce them to the position. And once they're introduced, they start to find confidence there that the ball is not something to be feared, that, right? Like, even if the ball does hit you, you should be all right. Kind of even on top of that, I would say this whole topic for me kind of struck a vein, because I was walking around in Denver not too long ago, and I walked by a park where I had some of my first soccer practices, and there were no kids to be found. So I really hope that kids can continue to enjoy sports and just keep finding themselves, because in my perspective, I see a shrinking group of kids that more and more business entities are targeting from a sports side. And so I think that there's a separation that needs to happen. They're like, hey, just allow them to be kids. And so I've been in the sports education space for a little while, and I've seen too many times now, you'll get these companies that are doing all their buzzword ballet of machine learning, data analytics for youth sports. I'm like, hey, how about you just play first? Yeah. And that's kind of the theme that we got into with the Keeper's Call. Now, at goalkeeper.com, we do have John Harrison on staff, who's kind of one of the premier goalkeeper data scientists, but he stays away from the kids.
Okay. The way you said that could very well be taken in the wrong context in an edit. So you might want to be careful how you phrase that. Sure. Sam, obviously, you're not that far removed from being a youth player yourself. When were you introduced to the game? Were we 5, 6 years old? And was it in a very technical, structured environment, or was it more of a free play?
I was introduced when I was about, I can actually tell you my definitive loving football moment, and loving goalkeeping especially. It was in 2012. So my local team, Reading, had just been promoted to the Premier League that season. It was their last game of the season at home, right? 2-2 draw to Crystal Palace, if I remember correctly. And I was forced to go to the game by my dad. I was about 8 at the time. So again, maybe slightly older than some people were. And when they sort of fell in love with football. And I remember going home, getting a mat, and this is almost a stereotype, but genuinely, this is not cliche, it's true. I got a mattress from my bed, put it on the floor, and started throwing tennis balls against the wall in the house, in the living room, and just diving. And from then, I started playing with my cousins and stuff in the back garden. And because I wasn't very good at football when I was very, very young, because I kind of come into it later than some people, I was just putting goal, right? So it was that kind of cliche story. It was really kind of trial by fire and just, having balls smashed against you. And like I mentioned earlier, it was only really when I was about 12 that I kind of went into that more technically structured arena, because I went on trial actually at a top Premier League club when I was 11, purely because I was pretty much self-taught at that point. I just ended up being able to do it pretty well. And it didn't go very well, the trial. And I started getting this kind of more technical coaching from then on, and the structure then kind of fell into place. But I'm really, really glad that I was not kind of indoctrinated, for want of a better word, into this kind of heavy, World Cup oriented mindset at the age of 7 and 8, because I know a lot of kids that were, and I know a lot of kids that fell out of the game at 15, 16, because I did it by choice, right? But a lot of kids did it because they just had so much talent. And they couldn't be bothered anymore. They didn't want to be there and kind of, constantly missing birthday parties, missing sleepovers, doing X, Y, and Z, not being able to go out with their friends and get drunk, these sort of things, because they were committed. I admire their commitment, right?
But hoping not their 13-year-olds weren't going out and getting drunk.
No,
I mean,
not the 13-year-olds.
Okay, okay.
I'll clear that up. Not the 13.
I know things are more laxed in Europe than they are here in the United States, but
no,
definitely
in later teenage years. obviously later teenage years. And then they kind of just fell out of love with it, and they were almost kind of molded into these machines. I remember a time when I was training probably 6 times a week and then playing twice on the weekend, and Brendan, you probably say the same, right? When you were younger, I know the pathways are slightly different in the UK and the USA, but regardless, there are still high workloads. And it was just like, I don't ever regret the experience, right? It was a fantastic experience, but you also need to remember that kids are kids. And I won't ramble on, but just one final point I'll make on this front is that a kind of youth tournament that my team used to play in every year, or one of my grassroots teams used to play in every year, had a sign at the gate, and it just said, the referees are human, the players are kids, and this is not the World Cup, so just let them be kids. And I think that's a really powerful message to take away.
I love one of the things that you just said right there, and this is not the World Cup, because I think, Brendan, obviously the pathways are a little bit different here, Sam, than they are in the UK, and Brendan can attest to this coming through the pathway over here. I feel personally and maybe I'm being optimistic here, but I feel like we're starting to allow our young players, because of better information out there. And a lot of it is because we're being exposed, especially during the pandemic, to a lot of different voices out there that weren't necessarily being exposed before. I feel like that the coaching's a little bit more lax now at the foundational ages, and we're allowing them to make decisions on their own, find what's effective for them rather than telling them how to do it.
Absolutely. And I think kids are the best at telling when coaches and just people in general aren't authentic. And coaching at that level and that kind of breakthrough age where you see a kid make their first save and then you see them get hooked. That's some of my favorite stuff. I've coached all over the place, and that young age where they're about to just buy into being a goalkeeper is one of my favorite things. After that point when kids start to identify, like, hey, I am a goalkeeper, that's an interesting thing. But then we step into, from that space, we step into kind of the, what is the healthy self-identification as a goalkeeper, right? Like, am I a goalkeeper? Is goalkeeping something that I do? And that's a whole nother thing that I think is rightly so being explored, especially because of kind of the pause we got during that pandemic.
You know, and you brought up something really good right there, Brendan, in regards to, am I a goalkeeper? Is it something that I do? Because, you know, Sam, we discussed this, you know, on our little chat, you know, a couple of days ago off the air, that, you know, what about just introducing, because I think one of the problems is that they try to identify goalkeepers too early, right? So they go, oh, those two kids, they're the ones that are going to be training in goal, as opposed to letting all the kids get the experience at 6 and 7 and 8 of playing in goal, because you never know who is a goalkeeper, as in, like, that's their mentality. Maybe they're not the greatest technical goalkeeper right now or tactical goalkeeper right now, but they have those inert qualities that you're looking for that goes, oh, we can develop something with this.
Yeah, no, I agree, Michael. I mean, it's interesting because I think it's a difficult one because, you know, there are stories obviously out there of people who have been pushed into goal purely because of the tool kid. There's one lad in our team at work, actually, at goalkeeper.com, who was kind of the makeshift goalkeeper purely because he was, you know, pretty tall and pretty kind of a pretty robust guy, right? And he was the kind of makeshift one when someone had not turned up on a Sunday morning. And he was actually saying that, you know, although he had never been a goalkeeper, he still found a kind of love for it and a kind of an admiration for it almost, and how unique it was. But I think, you know, just coming away from your point in terms of goalkeeping and football, I think this actually relates to the wider sporting space. I'm not sure how much, I mean, I think it's probably different in the US because, of course, you guys have got, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but kind of almost more national sports, so to speak. You've got obviously American football, basketball, baseball. These are all really major sports. In the UK, you've got rugby, which is less popular than football, and then you've got football. Of course, cricket, you've got some people play basketball. But when you look at, for example, a curriculum at secondary school in the UK, you have football on the agenda. And not in the case that football is like being played all year round, because it's not, because it's all seasonal. But then you also have rugby. But then in those two sports, you'll find a bunch of kids who end up being naturally good at it or just wanting to play it in some vein. When it comes to cricket, I guarantee you, you know, I think a lot of people my age in the UK will be able to relate to this. You'll go and play matches around the area with other schools, and there'll probably be one or two lads who play cricket, like, properly, right? But compared to football, it's pretty much half the year group at least. So speaking in terms of goalkeeping, you know, it's that whole thing about kind of where do we kind of draw the line in terms of specialising, and where do we draw the line in terms of just making sure that you're still being exposed to everything? And that's a really fundamental point that I think needs to be addressed in goalkeeping, is just making sure, as we discussed the other day when we were talking, Michael, that, you know, you have to be more than just a goalkeeper to be a goalkeeper, I would say.
Yeah, you know, and I think, you know, one of the things with that is early on, and I think, and I want to kind of, you know, pivot this back kind of the children's book, and I want to kind of show some little bit more pieces from the children's book. I think that, you know, properties such as that, children's book, games, those sorts of things, Brendan, allow children to be exposed to the position in a way that is not so forced or artificial or robotic, and say, like, there's this game called soccer, and there's this one player in the game that can use their hands, and they can, and I mean, I'm doing this like I'm talking to a 3-year-old or 4-year-old right now, because that's how you kind of have to approach it. Like, they can move and they can jump. And have you seen superheroes? They're kind of like superheroes out there in the way that they make these explosive movements and stuff. And I think, you know, showing these kind of images, and I want to kind of pop up some more of these to kind of just kind of share with everybody here what we're talking about here. So hold on, let me see if I can grab some more of these right here. Upload file. I should have some of these set up here. So like, here's another example that I really love. Like, and let's see if this little one is showing up here. Let's see if this pops up right here. Can everybody see this guy? So here, so Brendan, explain here, because this, I think, is something that you show a kid when you're showing them these books and they go, that looks like fun. I want to try that.
Yeah. I mean, every goalkeeper out there has probably had the goalkeeper coach experience where, right, like hand shape. And so with that, right, to do the job, we make shapes of all sizes, and we start there. And then we obviously give a shout out to Smichael here with the star. But what we wanted to try to prove with the keeper's call was that a non-traditional piece of sports media could have an impact. And it's gotten like pretty good response so far. We really haven't pushed it that much. Even our printer, the guy who's printing our books, is a goalkeeper, and he loves it. So that's been a great thing as well, because he's been buzzing just to get his own copy. So he will have the first edition, I imagine, that won't be shared. But with this, we really hope that this non-traditional type of media goes far, because we have ambitions to expand this into the wider football world. We want to hold all of football accountable and to try to make football better. And as we step into these next couple of years and into the future, we want to take football in an interesting direction. And kids these days are totally different than when any of us were growing up. My sister and her husband are teachers, and they've got 4 kids as well. And some of the things these kids say and are exposed to is just like totally different than my childhood. And we hope that we can kind of take that, like, almost overexposure of the world that a lot of kids have these days, and channel it in a positive way. And we've got a lot of plans to do that. I'm sorry, I'm rambling. This is something I'm really
No. I can tell you're very passionate about it. You know, I mean, Sam, you know, I think you're about the age of this children. No, I'm totally kidding. I had to go there at some point. Come on.
That's a good line. Fair play.
No, I did want to say this though. Did you have any insight in regards to or say in what images were shown in this book? Because it seems like you've been very deliberate in the choices that you've made and what images and what moments that you've shared. Because, I mean, it looks like right there, you got the Schmeichel. It looks like you've got, is that the Gordon Banks? Is that a Lev Yashin? Is that what you guys got going on there?
Yeah, very much so. And I mean, you know, I remember a call we had probably in March, perhaps mid-March. You know, Brendan, myself and our artists sat down and just literally talked through all the moments in goalkeeping that could be portrayed in a manner that would encapsulate the entire position, right? So we see here with Schmeichel, for example, this is one save Schmeichel made, but firstly, it's iconic. And secondly, it tells us something more about the nature of being a goalkeeper. You can see from here, physically demanding, it's unique in itself. And I mean, it's also pretty good for the cameras, right? We don't want to go out and be making camera saves, so to speak. But when you talk about kind of were the intentions deliberate behind the illustrations, very, very much so. I mean, there's another page you may have there, Michael, of a guy, I mean, it's obviously not named, but a guy called Arthur Wharton, who was a English player quite a way back now. I can't remember the dates exactly, but he was the first black goalkeeper to play professional football in England, I believe. Now, correct me if I'm wrong on the facts there, Brendan. But he's been illustrated on one of the pages as well, because, again, it's an intentional decision to show that, you know, goalkeeping can be a universal thing and there's unique stories within it on a personal level, but also in kind of wider society, I would say as well.
Yeah, you know, and I think, you know, one of the cool things with this, Brendan, is that, you know, these are moments that if you showed a child, I don't think they would resonate the same way as when you're putting it in a book like this. You know, they'll say, well, who's that old man there in black and white? You know, why is this important? But now, like, you show it like that, and let's say they see the clip afterwards, they go, that's the guy from the book. That's the guy from the book. And I'm talking about young kids here. I'm not talking about, you know, an 11-year-old or 12-year-old seeing this. I'm talking about 6 years old, because one of the most difficult things I think we find is finding mediums and aids, visual aids, Brendan, at those foundational ages to really, that they can comprehend. I think that's a big problem, especially here in the States, is we talk to them like they are seasoned professionals, you know, and they're 6 or 7 years old, and they, you just need to gamify it, and you need to find ways to make them understand what they're doing.
Absolutely. And that's a tough thing as a coach. It's never the same from player to player. And so it, in my opinion, you really got to know your players, and that can even change on the day, because one thing I experienced at my last coaching position, I was at the Colorado School of Mines, where everyone there is doing a robust engineering degree. And like, you don't know what those guys are going to be facing on the day in, day out. So they might have stayed up all night and done some crazy project, and you expect them to show up at practice and do that. But with little kids, you have no idea at all what is going to contribute to that kid's demeanor as you approach trying to train them. I love to do, and prior to my sessions, just some games, some juggling games that are always just kind of fun and get your head out of your head for a second. And I think that's really important with goalkeepers to take that pause and have that little breath of this goofiness, because right, we're the ones with, when any mistake happened, it generally goes on the scoreboard, or at least gets your heart racing.
Now, Sam, I know that you obviously, you know, you were a little bit different than the average child, you know, in regards to your passion. You probably had a notepad with you at six, on the field.
And a tape recorder.
Yeah. Break it. Actually, that old newsy look with like the pencil in the little hat and everything like that.
Yeah. You know it. Yeah.
with the recent paper with you. What other aids did you see growing up that really helped you as a child, you know, understand the game or find some understanding in the game from a passion standpoint, outside of just a children's book that's written, you know, 20 years later. So
you know, I know you're coming from, Michael. I mean, I think interestingly, this probably leads on to a bigger discussion on the influencer debate within goalkeeping, education versus influence, or what we can consider influence material, in inverted commas, right? Now, in terms of my personal sort of career, so to speak, you know, YouTube was massive. And I know that sounds kind of simple at first glance. I mean, specifically, the FA used to put out kind of inside training videos with the England goalkeepers, and they've been doing that for the last few years. And they've, if you watch them kind of avidly, which I don't so much anymore, but I'm obviously still kind of in touch with what's going on in that realm, they've made them increasingly more educational. And I think that's interesting. The reason I think that's interesting is because there's a very big debate nowadays. And I think also kind of a lot of bad press towards people who claim to be or could be considered goalkeeping influencers, right? So people who maybe are doing just the camera saves or kind of portraying this very flashy reality of goalkeeping. That being said, if we're talking about encouraging people to find a love for goalkeeping, find something that they find really engaging, they really enjoy, I think we have to be careful who we discredit, right? Now, I'm not going to say that I think a video of 10 top corner saves is a very good learning tool. It's not, in my opinion. That being said, say you're a teacher at school and you're teaching kids science. Are you going to start using words like photosynthesis or mitosis? No, you're not. You're going to be showing them Bunsen burners, blowing stuff up, but, you know, kind of fizzing up stuff in pots and pans and mixing chemicals together, because that's fun. It's engaging, even just visually, right? And I think a similar approach and similar kind of thought pattern can be taken towards the kind of educational approach to children at different ages of their career. And I think that's the biggest place that we've got to make a distinction, is not between whether it's good or bad content, whether it's content with context and whether it's appropriate to the person that's watching. So,
well, but that, it's funny that you say that, Sam, because, you know, just to kind of as we've opened that Pandora's box right there, if you look at the demographic of a lot of the people that watch that content, you know, top 10 corner saves, that sort of thing, it skews much younger, Brendan, doesn't it, than, you know, FA Boot Room.
Absolutely. I mean, TikTok is here. Need we say more? It's kind of part of back to the strategy. Like, I am a schemer, and I have this whole theory of football is interesting. We're entering a new age of football, right? Because you can kind of draw a corollary graph of peak oil. At the same time, we have Messi and Ronaldo's rivalry, and it's kind of now what? And so I really am excited for this new generation to take hold of that. But at the same time, the media and everything that's being consumed there is, all right, do we go and meet them there and start creating this media that like will engage and pull them into the sport? Is that healthy? Should we? That's a tough decision to make.
I mean, just to, like, if you don't mind me interjecting right there, I think, you know, I think there should be a blend of the two right there. You know, Sam, you know, obviously you're saying is that it's going to excite a kid more, you know, to see a science class, to see that volcano, you know, being made and erupting and everything like that. But there's got to be context too. And my problem with a lot of the content that you see out there that is flashy is that it's not, there's no context given to it. So even if you're 6 or 7, I think you still need to give context to what this is. Otherwise, if that's just what you're exposed to consistently as you keep growing up, well, you're never going to get to that next phase of learning, because that's all you're seeing. And even like the things like with the star shape and things like that, I think if you really want to break it down to a kid, you expose these flashy moments happen because to be effective because of this scenario, you know? So maybe the introduction can be the star shape. And then you talk about why Peter Schmeichel did that, you know? And I think then kids can kind of get it. That's just me getting off my soapbox right there. So
I think it's a fair point you made, though, just to jump in quickly. It's a fair point you made, yeah. Michael. I think also from a goalkeeper.com standpoint, obviously, to come with the brand at the moment, we're on it's very much a version one of the website, okay, and kind of a version one of the brand publicly, that we are looking to expand into the education space coming soon. And one thing I'll put forward is that the manner in which we'd like to go about that is kind of multi-pronged, so to speak. So we're going to have a lot of different people who see goalkeeping in very different ways, to kind of firstly approach all the different parties and stakeholders on the pitch, so to speak, but also to make sure that we're portraying a kind of reality and that there is a spectrum of views within goalkeeping. And I think from kind of a young age to, you know, to throughout your professional career, you're never going to not benefit from seeing lots of different points of view. And I think that's something that I would encourage people to look out for with goalkeeper.com is our kind of move into the education space and how we then go about mixing education and entertainment to make sure we're putting stuff out there that's firstly authentic, but secondly backed up with, you know, facts.
Yeah, you know, and like, you know, with you saying that right there, I think it's really important for there to be different points of view and different voices when you're growing up, Brendan. And when we're talking about empowering young goalkeepers, this cult thing that's going on in the United States where kids train with one person, you know, for their entire youth career, and then they go off to college and they go, I've never heard another voice before. That's not what my goalkeeper coach told me. First off, that my goalkeepers, Tim Dittmer taught me this. You know, they're not your goalkeepers. You're not their goalkeeper coach. It's a collaborative effort. So start trying to take that out of the equation. So I've been trying to do that, and it's very, very, very difficult because we've been trained subconsciously to say that over and over again. But what I'm trying to say is that, you know, unless you have had difference of opinions that maybe you agree with or don't agree with, you're going to have trouble when you get to that next level.
Absolutely. My first goalkeeper coach was from Argentina, and his name was Diego, and his English was broken, but he taught a lot of rhythm and different concepts like that to me as a maybe 10-year-old goalkeeper. And you know what, like, I needed that because I was this lanky kid. And now with all these options out there, and you have businesses and egos getting mixed into a kid's future, what I would encourage kids and parents even as well is kind of take a step back into the like the old style and make yourself, I guess the term could be a journeyman or journeywoman or journey person goalkeeper. Kind of go almost village to village and see what kind of knowledge, techniques, perspectives you can gain from different goalkeeper coaches. And in that you'll make your own style. You'll find your own way. And so, I really oppose that like narrow-minded, perspective to goalkeeping. And I want goalkeepers to go see the wider world. Right. And we're starting to see almost an amalgamation of styles, right? You have, Schmeichel's star type stave that's been brought in probably from handball. You have the side volley. Sam, correct me if I'm wrong here, but that's coming from South American influence, correct?
Yeah.
And we're starting to see all these little things that make goalkeeping what it is. And I actually saw in the NFL last time I watched football, must have been over a year ago, but a receiver caught the ball high and kept it high as he was being tackled, because if you bring it down, you're going to bash it off of somebody's helmet. And that's exactly what one of my goalkeeper coaches taught me. As you go and collect crosses, keep the ball high because it's up and away from traffic. And it was interesting to see like these little skills and almost just behaviors go from sport to sport, from country to country. So,
well, if you talk to top performance specialists, someone like a Ben Dragovan, who also was an ex-professional goalkeeper himself for the Seattle Sounders, I believe it was, they will discuss the fact that athletic movements, and especially when we're talking about cross-training activities such as wide receiver in football, in American football, gridiron, and soccer, and goalkeeper in soccer are very similar, volleyball, basketball, those sorts of things, and why it's so important for children to develop those, you know, kind of those skill sets at a younger age of doing different movements, because then that way they'll be able to make those sorts of movements, unconventional movements, let's say, in a game when they're called to be successful in an action. I want to bring this up right here. There's a comment that was brought up right here, and this is coming in from Portugal. And Fabio, I'm not sure how old you are exactly, so I'm sure you've still got plenty of a future here. But he goes, could I ever be in a goalkeeper with only 1.76 centimeters? Now, I'm asking this question right now here because I don't know what that is, and Sam knows what centimeters are. Maybe Brendan and I don't. And then he goes, also, how crazy is it that Lev Yashin has been the only GK awarded the Ballon d'Or when Courtois did what he did on Champions League final? Now, that being said, Fabio, that is 2022. The Ballon d'Or was for 2021 performances. So you never know what could happen to Courtois if he keeps that type of form this year for the 2023 Ballon d'Or. But let's just get back to the 1.76. And this is a question that comes up consistently by young goalkeepers in regards to height. I'm 5'8 and a quarter. I don't know what that is in centimeters. Probably under one. I don't know. But it's short. It's short.
To be fair, that's about 1.76 or so.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool. Yeah. Very cool. Okay, so Fabio and I we're about the same. So you know, I think it's all about relative to your attributes, right, Sam?
Yeah, I agree. I've worked with a couple of goalkeepers who were. I mean, I worked with one guy who's a few years ago who was 5'7", right? He was 5'7", pushing five, so 5'8", kind of in that realm, right? But point is, he wasn't 6'6". Unlike Brendan. But he
see Brendan's able to hide on the StreamYard because like he looks just like the average human being, but like if he got up he would literally be skying over the camera. So so he's learning to live like us by sitting down. So
yeah, and I mean so this guy he was about 5'8", 5'9", but like I say, you know, not 6'6". And he got his first professional deal at the age of 26 with a League One club in the UK. He had played semi-pro football for a long time before that. Now, in terms of, for example, power, physical power, unmatched. In the gym, constantly training, you know, the specific areas you need to train as a goalkeeper. But more so than that, he was someone who, I've never seen someone who had such dedication to something he loved, right? He was constantly reading about mindset, constantly talking to kind of so like kind of be your best self type people, you know, Those kind of he worked with coaches who believed in him. This is the whole thing. He never went anywhere that didn't suit his environment. And, you know, although he's, you know, not playing in the Premier League, I would say at 5'8", and he was at the time, last season, England's smallest professional goalkeeper. And it was a story that I just think, for in terms of Fabio's comment, you know, don't let anyone tell you that it's not possible, because there's always a way somehow. Now, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that, you know, it's going to be tough, right, if you're a smaller goalkeeper. Let's not kid ourselves. But think about it, you know, obviously, I think Fabio's from Portugal, like he says, you know, in those sort of countries, from what I understand, you know, you're not looking at massive goalkeepers regardless. In the UK, we, you know, a lot of lads who are released because of their height tend to go to places like America. They go to Spain, they go to, you know, onto the continent, and they, you know, they find a way to make sure their skills are being valued, because, like you mentioned earlier, Michael, you know, it is the fact that it's the skill that is going to take you there. Your physical profile will get you so far, right? But you can be really, really tall and be terrible. So let's not kid ourselves in that respect either.
I mean, I would say this to Fabio right there listening, or any undersized goalkeepers, is that, and somebody brought this up a few weeks back, and I forgot who it was exactly, but they said that, you know, small and average is going to be tough. Small and outstanding, and you've got a chance. So you just have to recognize that you're going to have to work that much harder in certain areas of the game where you may be deficient from a physical standpoint. So if you're an undersized keeper, you can't be weak on crosses, because they're going to knock you off. They're going to check you off right there. The identification right there, say, oh, you can't hand, too small. And it might not even be because you're too small. You might just be mistiming crosses. So learn how to make the proper runs, learn how to get under the ball, learn how, you know, maybe you can't handle everything. Maybe you have to box it out. Maybe you have to have certain size. You know, I've seen it at the professional level a lot of times when there's an undersized keeper, Brendan, and you know this, is they'll literally recruit 6'3", 6'4", center backs in front of them to make their job easier so that they can work on what's strong for them, dropping back to line, being reactive, those sorts of things, as opposed to putting them in a position of weakness or put them in a position of power. So these conversations also need to be had with your coaching staff so that you can be successful too. You know, that's how I would say that. And speaking of that, I want to throw this up here right here, because I thought this was really cool that you threw this in a children's book, and that's you talking about punditry. And Sam, you're a pundit, so I guess we're all pundits here. But this is something that I think a lot of young goalkeepers need to learn early on, is all the vitriol that's going to be spouted at them from that left-hand side doesn't matter. It's about the community right here, because we're all here for each other.
Yeah, I mean, that page is one of my favorites, to be honest. You know, I think it's pretty funny more than anything else. Yeah, I'd say when it comes to punditry, everyone watches the big games. Everyone watches, or in the UK at least, you know, Sky Sports, the big match on the Sunday. You've got people like, you know, Gary Neville, Jamie Carragher, who, you know, these are people that know about football. Let's not kid ourselves. You know, they have played at the top level. Do they know about goalkeeping? They were never goalkeepers, so that's kind of a very different conversation. Now, I think it's important to remember that everyone is allowed to have an opinion. You know, you can't deny that. But as a young goalkeeper, I'd really encourage people just to make sure they're around people who have credentials. And I'm not going to say credentials just in terms of your coaching badges, because, you know, I'm not going to pretend coaching badges and kind of being that, having that formal coaching education is not important, but also around people that have kind of lived the game through the lens of a goalkeeper, right? Because experience is something that cannot be taught. And I think, you know, interestingly, from a goalkeeper.com standpoint, John Harrison, our data scientist, his data was actually featured on Monday Night Football with Sky Sports by Jamie Carragher and Gary Neville. And you just see such a shift in the approach to talking about goalkeeping. Likewise, people like Rob Green, they've been quite prominent on television recently. These are the people that you need to be listening to, you know. And when you can channel who you're listening to and who you're taking your advice from, your life's going to become a lot easier.
Yeah. And with that being said, actually, I want to throw this to Brendan right here, because one of the biggest voices that youth players get is outside of coaches, outside of the other players, is parents. And I'm not even just talking about their parents. I'm talking about other parents on the team. So Brendan, you've been in this environment, you've been in this youth club environment, working with a majority of youth players, who play on teams, with team managers who are parents, their own parents, the parents of the striker who missed four goals, the parent of the center back that missed the header and it led to a one-time shot for a goal to be scored. How can the parents be part of the solution rather than the problem?
Wow. What a question.
That's, no, it's very profound.
That's a tough one. Because a lot of times, like, coaching staffs at clubs and in general will kind of make jokes regarding parents and them not understanding what's going on. And so building that level of communication, right? Having just kind of, hey, like, let's go out there and let's make sure we understand this level of what we're doing, right? If we're going to criticize something, it's at least on this level of conversation. And I think that's something that coaches need help with in addressing with that with their parents, to understand how to critique and when, maybe. And that's something we really want to target with goalkeeper.com, is supporting healthy relationships for all the stakeholders around that development process. And I've seen probably more than most, like, the ugly side of sports parents, and been spat at in the face. And this was in a volleyball setting.
What, spat in the face?
Total different setting. But I worked with a really large volleyball tournament, and they were having an issue with their registration software. So we had a line of parents wrapped around a building, and there was one mother who couldn't get in, and they had traveled from Texas to Denver for this tournament. And I'm not sure if she meant to add a little bit of moisture to all of her syllables, but it was definitely coming through. And I was getting poked in the chest and all this stuff, but I was just a face to yell at. So it's cool. But it's the parent question's tough, right? Because parents are already doing a lot just to get their kids there. And so it's tough to say, all right, like, at one point, I think I was 14, 15. I told one of, like, we had a dad who liked to run his mouth. And he yelled at me for getting scored on off of a header on a set piece. And I just yelled at him to shut his mouth. And you know what? All the other parents, like, applauded me for that afterwards and made him apologize. But it kind of goes back to what Sam said, right? They're just kids. And although we want the best for their future, all we can do is support them in that moment. And when they make a mistake, rather than like, yeah, like, you made a, rather than harping on that mistake, you made the mistake, what's next? And I think empowering maybe parents with good questions, right? When I've worked with a sports psychologist before, they break this down into two areas, right? You have your B cues and your do cues, right? So if something happens that rattles you out of baseline, can you have a BQ that helps you be something that will get you through that moment? Or can you have a do Q, which will help you do something to get you through that different moment? And just implying little tactics like that, we hope that we can help parents and coaches be on the same side, right? Because in most cases, parents and coaches should be on the same side.
I want to say this really, really quickly, Brendan, and I want to bring this to Sam, because he's the one who's recently been playing, you know, in the last few years, is that I think a lot of it has to go back to the coaches. And if there's certain behaviors, and Tom Wheel always talks about behaviors, you know, in regards to, and he's fantastic, fantastic coach, in regards to how your coaching behaviors affect your environment. And if parents see you acting in a certain way, they're going to think that behavior is acceptable in that environment because they see the authority figure doing it. So Sam, is that something that you've noticed? And sometimes in an environment where a coach acts in a certain demeanor, whether it's a very professional demeanor or a very unprofessional demeanor, that the parents think that's the way you're supposed to be.
Yeah, definitely, Michael. I mean, it's interesting in the UK at grassroots level, a lot of leagues actually have implemented kind of, how do I phrase this, kind of silence orders on parents, right? You're not allowed to talk to the referee if you're a parent. You're not allowed to talk to the players if you're a parent. Only the coach is allowed to talk to players and referee, etc. Now, where an issue comes in on that regard is that as you've rightly pointed out, the coach, you know, to kind of take this further, Brendan spoke about empowering people, and we spoke about empowering people at the start. So just to kind of tie this back, it as goalkeepers and as a goalkeeping, as people within goalkeeping, I think we need to go further and empower both coaches and parents to be the ones being more educated, not just the people that are actually playing, right? Now, that might sound pretty simple at first, but in practice, it can be difficult to do, because especially in the grassroots system, you've got a lot of self-professed experts, and suddenly you see people also, you know, this does not apply to everyone. There are some really fantastic coaches out there, but suddenly with social media, with YouTube, you can now make money off coaching. You can make coaching money off showing coaching sessions. I'm not saying that's everyone's motivation, but I am saying that gets, it can create a situation where coaching becomes, you know, almost a point of a kind of point of power, a point of fame, a point of influence for other people. And the best coaches I've worked with are ones that can kind of manage the relationship between parent, player, and then their own actions. And, you know, going back to the very, very simple principle of role models, right? I've worked with coaches out, like, you know, and managers who really, you know, with all due respect, kind of turned up on the Saturday, provided the balls and paid the registration fees, and didn't do very much else, you know, but were still the one. You know, I remember actually once being kind of called out in a training session for a mistake I made on the weekend. And I just remember going away and I just said to the guy, look, how's that going to help anyone? What help does that bring, right? You know, and I was very lucky that, you know, a lot of the parents were very complimentary of me, etc. But you have to, you know, it's difficult to manage that situation when you're 15, right? And in that sense, I think just coming back onto the point about empowering people, when we define empowering, it's kind of having the ability or the freedom to interact with others in a manner that's going to benefit them all. And feeding the information and the kind of skill to someone to do that is actually more of a kind of person-to-person trait, really, than anything to do with sports or otherwise.
Yeah. Speaking of empowering, I just want to throw this up here, right here. Whoever took the time yesterday to illustrate Saskia, myself, and Omar. I don't know why Omar looks like a chiseled superhero. he's like, just like this. I look like, I don't know where you found that shot, but you can clearly see my receding hairline. And Saskia is wearing a full national team getup, but because she's the only one of us that has accomplished anything in the sport. No, I'm totally kidding. Sort of. But shout out to you guys for doing these illustrations. This is really cool. I thought it was so funny how Brendan, you're like, we just kind of threw these, three of these together last minute in the last day or so. I'm like, man, imagine if they had a lot of time, to work on that. Look at this one from the iconic shot of, from 1999 World Cup of Saskia Weber with her red, white, and blue hair. I think that one could be framed and could be put up on auction. I don't know what the starting bid's going to be, Saskia. You'll have to set that. But really cool of you guys. And is this something that you're doing? You're going to be doing frequently with goalkeeper.com? Is doing little illustrations of either iconic moments or fans or that sort of thing?
Absolutely. These pieces are done by one of our illustrators, Nathan Mawawa. Some of his art is amazing that he's put together. As you can see here, he whipped these up in a short little window. So part of what we're doing, anytime we work with somebody, we want to work with anybody who wants to work with us. But anytime we work with anybody, we want to do art and get that visual message out and really just be the ones who are portraying goalkeepers in the art world. And that's been pretty fun so far. Between Nathan, Alice, Juan Carlos, and Skeelan, our art team has really been doing awesome. And we've even played around with the idea of doing a goalkeeper-based anime, even around the character Donnie from Den of Thieves, trying to do a little bit of fan stuff there and doing a prequel. Our focus is on the narrative and the art side. Our focus, we want to find an agent and a publisher who can help us kind of put a message out there into the entire football world, as I do feel like there is kind of a lack of general direction right now. It's not anybody's fault. It's just football in general with the world is changing. And we'd love to be the ones to kind of add a layer there of, all right, here's what's happening. Like, can we build from this and really empower people to start making some change for the game we all love?
Yeah. Speaking of making changes that we all love, guys, if you want to be part of the solution and not the problem, check out the free Union Soccer community on all platforms. It's not just for goalkeepers. It's for all soccer positions, guys. Still have not gone out officially public, but it is live and out there. And we want to get your feedback, guys. Get on the engage area in the forum. Start posting your own content. Start posting your own fan artwork. Maybe even goalkeeper.com. We'll start posting some fan artwork to get some feedback on there. Check out the explore section, guys. A bunch of really cool content. Maybe even some goalkeeper.com content. You never know in the future, guys. So just check it out. It is free on that link tree, unionsports.com, on the desktop as well. And that is my official ad read for something that I am actually invested in. That's a weird way to do an ad read. Anyway, guys, if you want to reach out to you guys directly, where's the best place to connect with you guys?
Brendan, I mean, I would say, you know, obviously all our social media, our DMs are open, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. In terms of email, Brendan, just remind everyone what the correct address is there.
Yeah. I mean, if you're looking to work with people at goalkeeper.com, you can reach out to us personally. My email is brendan@goalkeeper.com. Sam, yours is the same. It's sam@goalkeeper.com. We'll respond in kind. We don't have a contact email set up in that sense that we want to send people to. But if you're trying to do good in the goalkeeping world, we'd love to hear from you.
Awesome, yeah. Guys. And obviously, if you want to reach out to us directly, contact inside the18media.com or @goalkeeperpodcast on all socials. If you have a guest suggestion or topic suggestion, you can also reach out to us at goalkeeperpodcast on the Union Sports. Subscribe to the Union Sports, guys. I'm going to say it a third time because I heard that's how it works in advertising. It's three times and then people remember it. If you want to reach out to me directly, guys, @MichaelMagid on all social medias or MichaelMagidComedy.com for my tour dates. I have a show tonight in Burbank. If you're watching this live and in the Southern California area at 7 o'clock, I'll be on Lincoln Laughs. That's the real name of the show. I didn't make it up. If you're going to reach out to Saskia Weber @Saskia on the Union Sports, @ProGK Academy on the Union Sports, and you know their traditional social media handles. Guys, thanks. Honestly, this is really exciting. Congratulations first off on getting a grassroots project like this off the ground. We know how difficult it is. So really, really, really props to you guys for doing it the right way and having the right reasons for doing all of this. That's all the time on Inside the 18, and we are out. Later, guys.